I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On Sunday, April 5, an opinion piece, Help Us Learn in Prison by John Lennon, an inmate at the Attica Correctional Facility, appeared in the New York Times. John is one of 23 inmates who were enrolled in a privately funded college program. He'll be graduating with an associate degree this spring, but there are 2,300 prisoners in Attica. His piece started like this. If you haven't seen it, we'll put it up on our Facebook page. Did you ever wonder what prisoners do and talk about at the Attica Correctional Facility? We're all locked away in cell blocks watching TV. We watch a lot, all day, all night. And then we talk about what we're watching. We don't have access to the internet, but prison officials are all for TVs in the cells. And then he wondered, what if a few times a week, massive open online courses were streamed on the prison's internal station, Channel 3. There are already companies that record university lectures in areas like psychology and sociology and existentialism, economics and political science. Why not do that? Or better yet, why not have actual college classes in a university? And actually, that's nothing new. In the early 80s, there were 350 college degree programs for prisoners nationwide. It was during an era of rehabilitation, and perhaps now we're in an era of retribution. This hour, we're going to be speaking with two professors from Washington University who are part of a three-year program. They are teaching at a medium security prison near St. Louis, and what they have to say about how eager the students are to learn and what they have to say about how important it is for them to be teaching and how they have found this to be a really meaningful experience as a professor is pretty extraordinary. So we thought it would make a very interesting show, and so we're doing the show this hour. We have two guests with us. Margaret Garb is here. Margaret is teaching at this medium security prison. She is an associate professor in the Department of History. She's author of Freedom's Ballot, African-American Political Struggles in Chicago, From Abolition to the Great Migration, City of American Dreams, A History of Homeownership and Housing Reform. And she teaches courses in the American city in the 19th and 20th centuries, a history of poverty in the U.S., the modern American landscape, and black politics in American history. Professor Margaret Garb, thank you so much for being with us. Hello to you.
Hello. Thanks.
Hi. Yeah, our great pleasure. And also thanks to Professor Robert Henke for being with us. And he has been part of this program since the fall. He's a professor of comparative literature and performing arts. And I believe we'll hear the story about how he first went into the prisons with a drama program. And now he teaches courses he's recently taught, the Commedia dell'arte, tragedy, introduction to comparative literature, Renaissance theater. And Professor Henke, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What's extraordinary is to hear both of you comment on how meaningful this experience has been for you, that you've found that you have a group of students who, maybe because there isn't a whole lot else going on and nobody's ever realized that they have untapped intellectual powers here, that you find that you have a group of students who are really eager to learn, and that must make all the difference in the classroom. Professor Henke?
It really does. I can honestly say that I've never felt as much as a professor as when I've gone into the prison. I feel I'm bringing my own skills, and I'm with a group of individuals who are very passionately involved in the material, who really want to learn. The stakes are very high for them. They're very engaged in the material. I ask a question. There are only, say, 13 or 14 people in the class, and seven hands go up. So the intensity is just wonderful, and the ideas are really interesting and provocative.
Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of student. Obviously, they're incarcerated, Professor Garb, but they also tend to be a little bit older than students you would see, and probably a lot less affluence than students you would see in your classroom in St. Louis, right?
Yes, that's true. They're older and they are less affluent. They also have very different life experience, and they bring their life experience to the classroom in amazingly interesting ways. As Rob just said, they're very engaged. They read everything we ask them to read. And my students, I kept asking them to pay close attention to the text, to think about what kinds of evidence they're using when they're making an argument. And so they're constantly flipping through the books, reading out loud, quoting from what they've read. And they take the work very, very seriously.
Would both of you agree that we have been in, and maybe we still are, in an era of retribution instead of rehabilitation?
I would say the prison we're working in is not that way. We work with a wonderful warden who is very, very supportive of our programs and very happy to have us there. She'd like to see us expand our programs. She thinks that education really is an important element of the prison system. So the prison we're working in is not a prison that is devoted to retribution. It's very much about education and rehabilitation.
Professor Henke, you share that view?
I absolutely share that view about our wonderful warden, Jennifer Saxe, and Missouri Eastern Correctional Center, and also that we've really enjoyed the support of the Director of Corrections, George Lombardi, in the state of Missouri. But, you know, I think generally what you say is right, that prisons are about retribution. People are locked up and forgotten about. And I think what's extraordinary about, well, this particular prison and also our program there is they feel like they're somebody. You know, we all have different identities in life. I'm a father. I'm a teacher. They certainly are prisoners. They won't forget that identity. But when they step into the classroom, they are students. And I'm a professor, and we are engaging in a common inquiry. And I think that's really an experience of hope for them.
Mm-hmm. And you have made the comment, Professor Garb, that, well, obviously we have all kinds of problems with mass incarceration, but you've said enormous numbers of people are essentially thrown away. It's a problem that we all need to take seriously. People are just, as John Lennon wrote in that New York Times piece, watching television all day and all night. Eventually they're going to get out of prison, right?
Well, some will get out of prison, obviously, and certainly in the prison where we work, many of them will get out of prison. And education really transforms them. Mm-hmm. It helps them to think differently about themselves, helps them to think differently about their relationship to their community, and about being good and productive citizens. So, yeah, I think that we have just sort of thrown away lots of people and locked them up in prison and forgotten about them. And what you realize when you go in the classroom is that these are really smart and capable people, and it's an incredible waste to let all of these people lie in prison doing very little when we can make them, help them to become really engaged citizens.
And keep them, the statistics on this are pretty phenomenal, from going back to prison again once they're out.
Yeah, recidivism rates are really high for federal and state prisons nationally. About close to 70% of people who leave prison end up getting rearrested, and a large percentage of those end up going back to prison. People who have access to college courses in prison, whether they get a degree or not, the recidivism rates drop for those people to about 22%. And the students who have worked with the Bard Prison Initiative, many of whom end up getting associate's degrees or bachelor's degrees from Bard College, the recidivism rates for their students are about 4%. So that's pretty powerful numbers in favor of higher education in prisons.
Mm-hmm. Professor Henke, you first visited the prison, I understand, as a volunteer with Prison Performing Arts Group. That must have been an important visit for you, considering what you're doing now.
It was a wonderful experience. It was very pivotal. It was about 12 years ago. Prison Performing Arts was instilled. She's about to retire, but it's directed by Agnes Wilcox, actually from Wisconsin. She is, and we were doing what she called the Hamlet Project. We were studying, and or the men were producing and acting Hamlet one act at a time, and it was just incredible. I came in. It was a little, you know, and didn't know what to expect. I saw a guy who was reading the speech given by the ghost, Hamlet's murdered father. and he really wanted to play that role. Hmm. In that prison, it's not quite so much the case with MECC, but there were at that time it was Elsa Pacific, but the stays were longer, and a lot of the men had committed violent crimes, and they were reading a play about living with the consequences of violent crime, and they were just not like the undergraduate students I had, who have, they're in their own ways very interesting and important observations, but it was a different experience.
I would imagine. Also, tell us about the experience of teaching the Odyssey. You've taught it many times, but never like the way you've taught it in the prison.
It was great. It was a great first book to start out with. I just remember, we handed them out these brand new copies of Robert Fagel's translation, and Sing to Me, Muse, or The Man of Many Turns. Odysseus is a man who is a king. He is a warrior. He goes with great standing and prestige to the Trojan War, and upon return, he loses bit by bit almost every part of his identity. He loses his all of his men. He loses his ships. He loses his own identity. At one point, he has to say to the Cyclops, the Polyphemus, who's about to kill him, he says, "I am nobody." And then when he returns to Ithaca, he takes on the disguise of a beggar. Both strategically in order to get himself back into his citadel and also to test out who is loyal and who is not. And it's really something the men could understand. And then he has to reconstitute his identity. And it's a story, it's a great story about homecoming. Mm. He comes home to his loyal followers. He comes home to his son. There was a great recognition scene between the father and the son. And then finally he comes home to his wife. And because this is a medium security facility, almost all these men will be experiencing homecoming themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was very moving.
I would imagine. Professor Garb, you taught an Introduction to American History class. You have said that for any college student, this liberal arts education enriches your life and helps you become a better citizen. Tell me all that you covered in Introduction to American History and what clicked with the inmates in terms of their becoming better citizens.
A number of things. I would say I was teaching the same course on campus. So I was teaching the survey of U.S. history from the colonial era up to the present to college students on the WashU campus and teaching it to a group of 15 incarcerated students at the prison. They read the same books, wrote the same essays, listened to the same lectures. So it was very interesting to see two different groups of students take the same course. The students hooked into a lot of different things. Early on, we read a captivity narrative written by a Puritan woman, Mary Rowlandson, who gets captured by some Indians in 1676 during an Indian war, and she writes about what it means to be a captive and eventually about trying to come to understand the Indians, what they eat, how they sleep, how they move through the countryside, but also appealing to God to give her strength to help her through her ordeal. And the students really responded to that. At first, they didn't like her. They thought she was sort of racist and terrible to the Indians. But they've ended up really empathizing with her experience as a captive. So that was one of several different texts that we read that they enjoyed and took very, very seriously. And the life of somebody several hundred years away from their own lives that
yes.
they could empathize with.
I believe I read that you are either planning on doing this or already have done this, because I wonder what would it be like if you brought some of your on-campus students to have their classes in the prison instead of in the ivy-covered building. Is that happening? Are you doing that, bringing students from campus to the prison?
I'll take this one on. We just did that about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, you did?
Professor Barbara Baumgartner is teaching a course on early American literature, and she was teaching Hannah Foster's The Coquette, late 18th century novel, an epistolary novel. It's a series of letters. And this was assigned in the course in the prison, and she got 10 students from Washington University to read the text, and they came in and they had a common discussion. And it was really an interesting experience. The students wrote comments about it afterwards. They were very impressed with how closely the men had read the text. They had a very lively discussion, different points of view. It was a great experience.
I would imagine. So tell me how the whole program is funded. John Lennon was talking about how Governor Cuomo in February of 2014 announced a plan to have many programs like the ones that you teach, and the response that he got from constituents was, we're putting money aside for our child's education. Why in the world would we use taxpayer funds to go to prisoners? You know, it's our money and we want to spend for our kids, was what the governor, and so the program had to be scrapped. There are programs like yours, but there aren't lots and lots of programs. Tell me how yours is funded and what it would take for there to be widespread offerings in prisons all over the country.
Well, there were college courses in prisons all over the country in the 1980s and part of the 1990s until federal Pell Grants for incarcerated people were cut from the federal budget under the Clinton administration. And that put an end to many, many college programs around the country. In response to that, a student at Bard College, Max Kenner, who was an undergraduate then, decided that he would help to begin to provide college courses to state prisons in upstate New York. And he began his program, I think, in 1999 with a few undergraduates volunteering to tutor for in the prisons. And it grew gradually to include Bard faculty and faculty at universities and colleges around upstate New York, and they're now working in, I think, 6 prisons and have over 300 students who are incarcerated taking college courses through the Bard Prison Initiative. In addition to that, they've gotten some major funding from the Soros Foundation and the Ford Foundation and are using some of that funding to offer technical advice to colleges and universities around the country and to provide grants to programs like ours. So they've provided us with a grant to fund a 3-year pilot program here in the prison in Pacific, Missouri, and to use Washington University faculty to pay them to teach courses in the prison.
Mm. And Professor Garb, what prompted you to say yes to an offer to teach in the prison?
I guess a lot of things. Partly, I spent a lot of years going to college and graduate school and writing books and developing these skills as an educator and as a scholar. And I wanted to think about using my skills in a different kind of place. You know, I volunteer my time at the food bank here in St. Louis and at other places, and that's really rewarding. But it seemed to me would be even more rewarding to use my skills benefit and educate a broader audience. The whole problem of mass incarceration in the United States is really, really serious. And as we said earlier, we are locking up and forgetting about lots of people who are smart and talented and capable of becoming productive citizens. And so it seemed that I have a skill that I can offer, and providing higher education in the prisons was one way of working towards the end of mass incarceration in the United States.
We're going to welcome phone calls from our audience. We're talking about this 3-year-long pilot program that's providing a select group of inmates. I guess they had 65 applicants and could only choose 30. They are at the Missouri Eastern Correctional Center, and they are being provided with liberal arts education. So you have to have a high school degree or a GED. And the program has enabled incarcerated people to earn bachelor's degrees from Bard College while serving their sentences. Our guests are professors at Washington University. Professor Margaret Garb has been teaching an Introduction to American History class at this prison. And also our second guest has been Professor Henke has been at the same prison, and he's been teaching other kinds of courses on art and classical to Renaissance literature. And they've been extremely rewarding teaching experiences for both of our guests, and I would imagine very rewarding experiences for those who are taking the classes as well. What do you think? Does it make sense for us to put more money if not college professors coming into prisons, what about the inmate at Attica's suggestion that at least you have educational programs that are coming out over the television set because people are watching television all day long. So there are university lectures that have already been recorded. Why not have those be a part of the prison experience? Or do you think that, well, you did something wrong to get in prison, and I'm sorry, we're not going to use taxpayer funds to help you out in any way? Our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, where we love to read your messages always, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It was 150 years ago tomorrow that President Abraham Lincoln was shot. He died early in the morning of April 15th of 1865, and it was just a few days after the Confederate surrender. Our guest has written a really absorbing book that chronicles the personal and very intimate responses of Northerners and Southerners, soldiers and civilians, black people and white people, men and women, rich and poor. And it's all found in her book, which is titled Mourning Lincoln. And that's what we will do, Mourning Lincoln, tomorrow during this hour. All right, let's welcome phone calls. 800-486. Oh, we got tons of phone calls. I just looked at the phone bank. Good. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we'll start our phone calls with Jeff in Waukesha. Hi, Jeff.
I'm just curious as to how many corporate prisons are performing the same kind of gifts to the prisoners that these professors are.
How many corporate? I'm not sure I understand you. Corporate,
corporate
donations?
Prisons.
Corporate.
There are plenty of corporate prisons that probably are not performing what these professors are allowed to perform at.
Okay. Are you under unusual circumstances, rare circumstances, where you are in Missouri, would you say, professors?
No, not at all. We're working in a state-run prison. There are prisons that are contracted out to private corporations. I guess that's what you mean.
Yeah.
The caller may mean. I don't know how many or if privately run prisons are also sponsoring or allowing college education in those prisons. Those are actually a fairly small percentage of prisons in the United States.
Let's go to Ray in Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
I think the last caller meant to say for-profit prisons, because we have a system in the United States now where they are funneling especially inner-city kids into prisons to keep them full so that the owners of these prisons are making huge profits. Now, this is a great show. This is one of the best shows you've had in a long time, Kathleen. I really wish you bring these guests back maybe once a month. The state of Wisconsin incarcerates more black young men than any other state in the nation, as far as I know. And we as a country incarcerate more people than any country in the world. And why in the world isn't this mandatory? The way you could pay for these professors to come into the prisons would be to guarantee the inmates, you finish a course, you get 6 months early release. You finish two courses, you get a year early release. If we're paying $40,000 a year to lock these guys up, and when they come out, they're in worse shape than when they went in, if they got out 6 months ahead of time, that would be $20,000 we could put to hiring these professors. This is a no-brainer.
Professor Henke.
I will say that our program, I won't list specific figures, but it is very inexpensive. We operate on a low overhead. It really is not costing that much. So it's a pretty good economic proposition, I think.
Yeah, I would add college is really the most effective and inexpensive way to help people break the cycle of crime and incarceration. It's much, much less expensive than paying to keep people in prison for years and years.
If I could just chime in again, the whole idea with our program with the Bard Project is liberal arts college. We are not teaching vocational classes, valuable as they are. We're teaching critical skills, critical thinking, writing, communication. We're teaching kind of freedom of thought, the capacity to look at things from different perspectives. And you don't always see directly, immediately, the practical use of it, but we're really equipping people, I think, to go back into their communities.
Thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Jim calling from, oh my goodness, what happened to the board there? I guess this is Marlene from Wauwatosa. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
All right, I'll try to be as brief as I can. I was angry and just about in tears and was going to turn off the radio. I decided to call. I'm going to sound like a terrible person, but what is making my eyes water is I know this young man who is, you know, taking the bus at 10 o'clock at night, 2 o'clock in the morning, trying to put jobs in so he could go to a community college and take an EMT class, which is transportation is even difficult, needs dental work, is the nicest guy, and I'm sure there are a lot of them, hasn't committed a crime, and I'm not negating the program, and I don't want you just to say, I know, I want answers on how come they can't, or this person can't get an education also isn't available to them. And there's no way. You can only get a couple of part-time jobs, and you can't even put your hours to make a full-time job. I'm very, very upset and just about in tears because there are a lot of nice young men out there that can't make it either.
Thank you for your call, Margaret. Whoever wants to start.
Well, I would say I agree with you. I think it's terrible that young people or people of any age can't get the kind of education that they need to move themselves forward in life and to get jobs that are enriching both intellectually as well as materially. So I agree. I think that everybody should have the opportunity to go to college and to study the liberal arts or to go to some kind of vocational program, whatever they choose. I'm not opposed to that at all. I think it's profoundly important. And I think that we all need to put more pressure on our state legislatures to fund higher education at the state level and to put pressure on the federal government to expand federal programs for grants to low-income and struggling college students.
If I could just add, a few of those people are working at prisons as guards and administrators, and one of the aspects of our program is that we are also offering college courses to staff, to prison staff.
Mm. So, thank you very much for your call, Marlene. I hope that was helpful. Our number is 800-486-8655. Here's a comment from Lynn on Facebook. I'm guessing so many prisoners are there because of limited opportunities. They only have access to underfunded schools and are often written off by teachers. It takes some longer to mature. This is a great program. Thank you, professors.
No, thank you.
Thank you. I mean, they're amazing students. What we are seeing is that, and who wouldn't expect this, the writing skills need some work. My sense is they think a little faster than they write, or their writing can't, at least, I think we're going to be there in a couple of years, but it's not quite catching up with the thinking because of these very disadvantaged educational experiences they've had.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a wonderful opportunity. There's a sense of concentration. Somehow it's a great combination. The professors, Maggie and I, have gotten a tremendous amount out of this. And I think the students are as well.
Mm-hmm.
The students absolutely are. They thank us all the time. They're very, very grateful for the books, for the classroom time, for the way that we as professors take this seriously as well and treat them as serious college students. So I would want to point out that they're very, very grateful for this opportunity.
I would imagine. What's it like to be teaching in a building that I'm sure is just bare bones. There's nothing fancy. I don't know if you get a cup of coffee or I'm sure there isn't an ivy-covered wall outside the classroom in which you're teaching. One of you talked about when you strip it down to just basics, just a room with people who are in prison garb for the most part, that it's a change in the way that the intensity of the conversation or the intensity of the material that's being presented without all the frills. What difference does it make to not have the frills?
Well, you know, it would be nice to have the frills also, but, you know, college is ultimately not ivory-covered walls. It's not manicured lawns. It's not even elaborate administration and student life. It's really comes down to really a room in which there's a committed specialist, someone who has really devoted their life to a subject, and there are a group of committed students who are pursuing with dedication and rigor a certain discipline. And that's what college is. And that is something that we actually can create. It takes a certain amount of discipline, even within the... There are some obstacles, but we really can create that. And it's a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Joe in Madison. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick comment. I've got a good friend who's in prison right now here in the state of Wisconsin. And he lives in fear, like, day in and day out. He won't even talk to me over the phone as far as, you know, what's troubling him. Just the whole surrounding, you know, is very, very intense. Education is, like, the one thing that he looks forward to in prison, the opportunity. Right now, he's trying to... get enrolled in the education classes that are offered there, but he's had a hard time of it due to his sentencing. He doesn't have a long enough sentence or something. I was wondering if your guests could comment on what they know about what classes are offered to who, or what services are offered to who, and who qualifies and who doesn't.
Well, for our program, you just have to have a GED or high school diploma and complete the application. So it's pretty open. You know, I think that the administrative staff reviews the application. If there have been a lot of conduct offenses, they might get pulled out. But they've actually been pretty open. So it's an open program. You were talking about your friend in prison. One of the students in my class I knew was under a lot of pressure during the semester. I think he was sort of caught between a couple different gangs on the in the prison, and he remarked once how grateful he was to have something else to talk about, to have a different topic of conversation compared to the pretty boring and stultifying conversations he had elsewhere.
I was wondering, I go back to John Lennon's comments from Attica, when he talked about this online program that evidently is available where companies have university lectures. If you're spending all day watching television, I would imagine, why not have it be a par for the course just to have these kinds of educational programs piped through the prison's television system? Does that happen where you are, and why wouldn't that happen in every prison?
It's not happening in the prison where we are, and I'm not sure why it wouldn't happen or whether it could. I would say that there's an incredible benefit to having real people in the classroom talking to mm-hmm. each other mm-hmm. And to have the students create a kind of intellectual community in the classroom. through the reading books together, through engaging in debates. I mean, that's the whole idea of a seminar, and that's what we are promoting with our students. The other thing I would add is that our students talk about how they go back to their cells and somebody, a friend will come by or their cellmate will say, oh, what's that book about? And then they end up talking to other people in the prison, other inmates, about the courses they're taking, about the books they're reading. And so what happens in our classroom has a kind of ripple effect, stretching outward into the larger prison community and then ultimately, I think, into the larger non-prison community.
It's hard to disagree with an online lecture. And one of the great things is that you get people in a seminar room, you know, civilly disagreeing with each other, having very different points of view, exploring something from different perspectives. But, you know, this is something probably the country could progress in and maybe is not doing so well in at present. Just learning how to disagree, learning how to understand different points of view. There's a great moment in King Lear where one character says, "And that's true too." You know, there's more than one perspective.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for the call. Mike in Madison is next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I remember back in the 70s that there was a really big push for the rehabilitation of prisoners, our folks in prison, and it seems like that has died off with the advent of what do you call them? Oh, private prisons, for-profit prisons. That has died down since then. So I'm really glad to see programs like this come back. And the young lady who called about why can't everybody get free education, and I believe that you mentioned that white are people in Congress and stuff. Well, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren have put out bills. Hey, education should be free for American citizens who live here in this country. Let's give people a break on the student loans, things of that nature. So, yes, there are bills forward, but they are not the party in charge, and it does not include tax cuts. And how in the world would you expect the state of Wisconsin, who is basically trying to destroy the University of Wisconsin by these deep budget cuts, and then not only that, the school cuts of, what, another $150 million? Education is not a priority to the people who are in control of the conversation.
Thanks for the call. But what we're also seeing is that people who are in control have been both Republican and Democratic, have they not? Somebody was mentioning federal Pell Grants that were cut during the Clinton years. This whole idea of three strikes, you're out, retribution, has been something that the country has embraced most politicians, I think, since before 1980, maybe late 70s. For a long time now, we embrace that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that we've spent a lot of time talking about being tough on crime and vengeance and punishing people. I actually think that we're at a moment where people are beginning to rethink those approaches.
Right.
I think a lot of people are realizing that locking people up is not the solution. It does not end crime. It just creates these enormous prisons with ballooning state and federal budgets paying for prisons. And that it doesn't do anything to help ordinary people's lives, whether you're a person who's incarcerated, a family member of a person incarcerated, or part of a community. So I think that this is a moment when lots of people are beginning, politicians as well as the rest of us, are beginning to rethink the notion of incarceration as a solution to crime. And I think that more and more people are beginning to understand that education might be a better solution rather than just locking people up.
I can't speak to Wisconsin, but I think there's evidence that in the country this might be a very interesting across-the-aisle issue. There are an increasing number of conservative politicians who are coming out for rehabilitation rather than retribution.
And let's go. Thank you very much for your call. Vicki in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Along these same lines, when people complain about the cost to taxpayers, I think they probably don't think about the cost to taxpayers for keeping these people in jail or for the recidivism rates and stuff. And if you can reduce the recidivism rates, that would be money well spent to educate people and help them to be productive members of society.
That's absolutely right. Programs like ours will save taxpayers money.
And it's also the same kind of sentiments from a tweet from Elizabeth. Ex-convicts who reoffend are not giving back to society. Train them to be well-functioning members of society. Prisons should be judged as schools are, not by tests, but by recidivism rates. You can also tweet us if you would like to. You can. That'd be good. And that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls for our guests, and we go to Francisco in Appleton. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that, you guys are right on. I actually served 15 years in the Wisconsin prison system, and I've been out for about 2.5 years now, and you name it, I lived it in there. My first 5 years were, extremely violent, and I loved every minute of it. It's what I knew from the streets, and the middle 5 years were just contemplating on, this probably isn't the best for me. And my last 5 years, I concentrated on school, and I actually attended Marine Park Technical College when I was in Kettle Moraine, and I graduated from Microsoft Office Software Program, and that opened doors for jobs within the prison as well as outside the prison. Mm. And upon release, I actually attended WTCS school as well, where at that school, I actually was voted vice president of my campus,
and
then I went on to become the lieutenant governor for my district as well, and they knew my story. And education has definitely been the key, and I'm going to continue to go to school. I'm actually enrolling this summer at MATC. So I'm glad you guys are doing it, and if there's any way I can help, I would love to help. I actually speak at the University of Wisconsin Law School to their law program. And,
you do.
I've spoken at different corrections classes as well to young men and women that want to go into corrections. I speak to them as well. And, I'm excited. I'm really happy to hear this, that it's going on, and I definitely thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah,
and don't go away. I'm going to have KP get your name and address because you may want to talk to us down the road, too. It would be an interesting show. Well, there's case in point, right? And I'm sure that you've worked with a lot of prisoners who will say exactly the same thing. It really literally, it changed my whole life.
Absolutely. And the director of corrections, George Lombardi, really encouraged us to work at this particular place because actually it's medium security. There's another wonderful program in St. Louis run by St. Louis University at Bon Terre. It's a much longer stay. So our students are getting out. Two of them have already gotten out and are interested in continuing college courses, and we're going to try to help them do that.
And let's go next. Al, thanks so much for your call. Let's go next to, that's Francisco. We go to Al next in Madison. Hi, Al.
Hi. I'm also a beneficiary of some of these programs. I did 17 years in Wisconsin. And one thing that they do is they get your mind off the normal routine in prison, the violence, the depression that can sink in. It really helps to, I think, calm the general population down. It causes a ripple effect, You have 800 people in a prison. 100 of them are benefiting from this and talking to all the others. It diffuses situations. The people that are in the program, they think it's a benefit. It's a privilege. So, we did everything we could to make sure we weren't getting into trouble so we could continue this program. Since I've been out, I've gone to college. I am finishing for my associate's degree that I started in prison. But I've also gone to technical college. I've kept an A average. I'm in Phi Theta Kappa.
Oh, goodness. Congratulations.
And it helps me to deal with people at work. It teaches me, it taught me the critical thinking skills to diffuse situations at my job.
Mm-hmm.
I've completed my sentence with no problems. The effect that it would have if you could get more people into it, reduce the recidivism, which would help reduce the, would be able to help reduce the prison budget,
mm-hmm.
and maybe funnel more money into education at the state level.
Mm. And Al, tell me what life was like before prison. Were you a good student when you were young? Did you take advantage of education before you entered prison?
I was a fairly good student, and yeah, I did some technical college, was in the military, And then after the schooling and stuff, I kind of got involved in some drugs in the wrong crowd, and things just went south from there.
Professor Henke, you want to start?
I mean, it's just it's one of the this enjoyment of conversation, just having something else to talk about.
Yeah.
I remember a couple of guys talking about, we started talking about Plato's dialogues in the weight room. One thing I was thinking of, I taught this great French philosopher named Michel de Montaigne, a 16th century philosopher, not an easy writer. And he writes this essay called On Solitude. Mm. Montaigne is, in some ways, the least likely author that a prisoner might relate to. He was wealthy, and he sort of coined the term the ivory tower. He retired from public life, and he went up to his tower and just read Greek and Latin for 10 years. But these guys, in some sense, they have a lot of solitude. They certainly do when they get put into solitary confinement. But prison is very noisy. It's hard to find concentration. It's hard to find real sort of good time to yourself. And I was amazed. That was their favorite essay on solitude. To think about just how that solitude could be actually something enriching. Certainly, when you have the companion, such as a 16th century French philosopher.
Mm. And Professor Garb, was there a similar unit that you had on your American history course that captivated everybody?
Well, there were a few things that they were really interested in. We read a slave narrative, Harriet Jacobs' slave narrative, where she describes running away from a plantation where she had been enslaved, and she ends up having to hide in a attic for 7 years before she can escape from South Carolina. And she talks about being trapped in this attic and watching the world outside as she's in this attic. But even more importantly, she talked about freedom and how freedom means different things to different people. And I think that really appealed to the students because they could think about freedom in terms of an intellectual place, putting your mind in a place where your mind is free, even if your body remains in the prison. And they could think about their own creativity and their own intellectual growth as an expression of a kind of new kind of freedom. So I think that was really useful to them. I would say the other thing with American history is one of the things you learn is the sort of social and historical processes that gave rise to the world that we live in. And one of the things they began to pay attention to was that nothing that happens in the past was natural or inevitable, which means that we can begin to think about how we remake our own futures. If nothing in the past was natural, nothing in the past had to happen, nothing in the future has to happen either. And I think that was liberating to my students to think that they could begin to think about making their own futures for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we call it a liberal arts education. It's training in freedom and the ability to choose between different possibilities and to make up one's own mind.
Thank you, Al, so much. I'm so glad that people call to have benefited from such programs. What dreams do you have? Professor Henke, we'll start with you, and then Professor Garb, I'd like to hear from you as well. What dreams do you have for this program? Where would you like to see it expand?
Well, the men are, even as we speak, clamoring for more courses. That one is not enough, they say. They're just taking one at a time at present. You know, depending on income, on donor support, and on finding more faculty, which we're pretty confident about, I think the next step is to move to a 2-year degree, an associate's degree program. I think if they were taking, you know, 2 or 3 classes at a time, they could complete that within, say, 3 years. That would be a great accomplishment. So we want to have a greater involvement from faculty at Washington University. We're committed to having a full-time faculty, at least half tenured faculty and other full-time faculty. So we're being picky about who we ask, but we're getting some great responses.
Wonderful. Professor Garb, how about you?
Yeah, I'm hoping that we can expand the program and offer more courses and eventually have students work their way through our program to get an associate's degree and maybe in the long term a bachelor's degree. I think that that would be a really wonderful and exciting thing for us to be able to do. We need to expand support from the university, from donors in order to fund our program. And we need more faculty to get involved. I hope that people will begin to think of the prison as just an extension of the university.
What a thought.
Satellite campus.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. Thank you both so much for being with us. Just give them a tape of the show. You'll have everybody signing up. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks to you. Our guest, Professor Robert Henke, Professor of Drama and Comparative Literature, Director of Undergraduate Studies for Washington University, and Professor Margaret Garb, Associate Professor in the Department of History at Washington University. Well, that's quite a program, isn't it? Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour and to KP for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. A reminder, tomorrow is the 150th anniversary of the shooting of Abraham Lincoln, President Lincoln. He died the next day early in the morning. We'll be speaking with the author of Mourning Lincoln, in which she looks at how he was mourned or not mourned, depending on where you lived and what your political sympathies were. So that's coming up tomorrow.